listening to EcoJustice Radio from the KPFK Los Angeles studio. A project of SoCal 350 Climate Action, our show presents environmental and climate stories frame a social justice frame, featuring voices not necessarily heard on traditional, mainstream, or even public media outlets. I am your host, Jessica Aldridge, and our show today is called The Huicharica People, Protecting the Sacred Lands of Mexico. We have two guests, Andrea Perez, a 23-year-old indigenous environmental scientist and geospatial analyst. Her desire for people to build personal relationships with Earth is moved by her approach to the climate crisis as an indigenous environmental justice advocate. Her ancestral lands are currently under threat by foreign countries trying to exploit the rich land for profit. And our other guest is Susana Valadez, the director of the Huichol Center for Cultural Survival and Traditional Arts. She is a UCLA anthropology grad student from the 1970s who married into the Huichol, or Huicharica culture, and has since then spearheaded a humanitarian organization in the mountains of Mexico. Ms. Valdez is a Nobel Peace Prize nominee and has dedicated her life to the well-being of the tribe and the protection of their people, sacred plants, and cultural legacy. Welcome, listeners. This is EcoJustice Radio. Today's show is called Huicharica People, Protecting the Sacred Lands of Mexico. The peoples of Mexico are facing serious impacts from the heat waves, droughts, and floods related to extreme global climate disruption associated with the burning of fossil fuels and the global addiction to the petroeconomy. The indigenous people of Mexico are some of the most vulnerable to even slight changes in temperature and rainfall as they grow their own food and have learned over centuries of subsistence to survive in arid deserts and remote mountains, generally far from the trading and transportation of cities. Thus, protection of their traditional sovereign lands is the only way to maintain the security of water, food, and cultural sustainability. Recently, Mexico is losing 400 square miles of land to desertification each year, forcing the migration of an estimated 80,000 farmers. The Huicharica people, also known popularly as the Huichol, are an indigenous group inhabiting the remote reaches of the Sierra Madre Occidental of Mexico. The sacred landscape, called the Huiricuta, has been invaded, private properties have been encroached on, traditional pilgrimage routes, and 78 mining concessions have been granted to the First Majestic Mining Corporation out of Canada. While this project purports to bring some jobs and economic development to the area, it also drains and pollutes water resources and limits access to their ancestral homeland. Today, we will discuss the struggle to protect the sacred lands and the culture of the Huicharica people. And it is my pleasure to welcome to EcoJustice Radio our guests, Andrea Perez, Indigenous Environmental Justice Advocate, and Susana Valadez, Director of the Huichol Center of Cultural Survival and Traditional Arts. Welcome, ladies, to the show.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Well, Susana, let's start with you. Who are the Huicharica people? Where do they originate, and why is their story so important?
The Huicharica people, as you said, also known as the Huichols, are a Euro-Aztecan tribe that lives in a crack in the world. It's like a Grand Canyon-like environment spanning four states in Mexico, but primarily they're in the states of northern Jalisco and Nayarit. And because of the rugged topography and their inaccessibility in their remote location, they've been able to keep a way of life dating from pre-Hispanic times alive and well, and much of it revolves around the shamanic traditions and the use of the sacred medicine plants, particularly peyote, which is a cactus that grows in a region that's 300 miles east of them. So actually, that's where the problem is. That's where the invasion of their lands are taking place, because they have their mountain homeland, but their most sacred medicine plant teacher is available to them only by making long pilgrimages to the Huiricuta Peyote Desert in the state of San Luis Potosí. So they're an ancient tribe in the modern world struggling for survival, and it's not looking good for them, to tell you the truth.
And Susanna, you were nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize and founded the Huichol Center for Cultural Survival and Traditional Arts. Can you tell us a little bit about that center and the significance it has with the community?
Well, it's a long story. It's a long story, Jessica, but in 1975, I was a grad student studying Latin American studies at UCLA and embarked on a field study that was supposed to last just a couple of weeks. But being from that era in the 70s, I was exposed to all of the writings of Carlos Castaneda, and I was actually studying ethnobotany and the use of plants, psychedelic plants. So I decided to prolong my stay and really get to the bottom of some of the immense indigenous knowledge that the plants provided for the people. But in the process, I fell in love and married the subject of my investigation, a Huichol Wirarica artist, a yarn artist. And that started off my 40-year commitment to trying to keep the people thriving in a culture that I could see the writing on the wall was soon to disappear into some museum basement because of the intrusion of modern culture. So the Nobel Peace Prize nomination came as a great big surprise to me, but finally someone recognized the value of my work, and results don't lie. I've gotten a lot of good results and changed the quality of a lot of people's lives because of my dedication to helping them thrive as a culture and keeping their amazing, beautiful cultural legacy alive and well.
And Andrea, you are an Indigenous environmental justice advocate. What is your personal story? How did you get involved in social environmental justice, and what is your connection to the Wixárika people?
So my work in Indigenous environmental activism started when I first visited Sitka, and I got to interact with the Tlingit elders, and they started telling me about the stories of their creation stories. After that, I came back, and my dad had always told us we were Indigenous and to be proud of our Indigenous heritage, but he never really specified where that was from. And I've been exploring those roots. Both my grandmothers spoke their native dialect, but they never passed that down because of the socioeconomic issues that a lot of people in the country of Mexico face. So I've been able to continue to narrow down my cultural background and understand the nations that I come from, the communities and the culture. And I grew up in San Pedro and Corona, and there's a lot of oil, air pollution, and mining.
Here in California.
I'm very motivated to supporting Indigenous issues, and through my GIS work, I first started participating in trying to raise awareness for the Lumar killings, and most recently participating in the intertribal Indigenous youth movement that transcends our own nations, our own individual nations. As soon as Mauna Kea, as soon as Malala went on to chain herself, I made sure that I was posting every day and just trying to share the information so that people understand what's happening throughout the world.
Currently, the Wixárika, or the Huichol land, has been divided into 78 multinational mining concessions, which refers to an area of land that's allocated by the government for the extraction of minerals. These concessions have been overseen by the First Majestic Mining Corporation. It's a company out of Canada. What are they mining, and what have been the social and environmental impacts from that mining?
The company is mining for gold and zinc. Throughout the process, they're disrupting the natural biodiversity of the area. And although they claim water remediation, that doesn't mitigate the impact towards the land and towards this area that is traditionally used for agriculture in some areas where they're building roads to extract the minerals. So there's also been the issue of acid rain. My father lives on the land, and he's told me about the acid rain that affects the land. So he stopped using pesticides to try to limit the impact, the health impact on his community. But there's also the issue of there's no more need for gold. What they need is clean water and clean air and clean land to be able to be sustainable by themselves, which they have been able to do successfully for thousands of years.
And Susanna, have you, what's your experience been with the multinational concessions that are happening with the mining?
Well, we need to clarify that the mining companies are mining an important sacred site of the Huichol people, which is, again, in the Peyote Desert of San Luis Potosí. So it's not in their homeland that the concessions have been granted. It's in the land, it's in a mestizo area now that has people depending on ranching and, you know, agriculture. But the mining prospects of providing jobs for this endemic population in the Peyote Desert is making everybody want all of the people there in favor of the mines, and they don't care that it's absolutely destroying the central core of the Huichol magical religious belief system around the sacredness of that space as their altar to their gods and goddesses, because that's the endemic region of where the peyote grows. Peyote isn't found in other locations. That's the one region in Mexico that is the native endemic region where it grows. And the greatest impact of the mines is that it's totally destroying. They're just plowing up the peyote fields and poisoning the water, because water is needed to extract. There are certain chemicals that are needed to extract. They're also mining silver there. So the chemicals are needed to extract the something or other from minerals, but it's contaminating all of the reservoirs and water, underground water, and it's just making a mess of one of the most amazing biodiverse deserts in North America. So there's an incredible environmental impact, as well as uprooting a cultural patrimony that's been in effect for thousands of years. And peyote and the ceremonies and the wisdom that the Huichol people gain from their ceremonial use of the magical cactus, that's being totally destroyed, and it's aiming just at the heart of this indigenous culture that's been able to survive against all odds because of their spiritual beliefs into the modern world. So it's a big problem.
A big problem. If you are just tuning in, you are listening to Ecojustice Radio on KPFK Los Angeles. We are here with Andrea Perez, Indigenous Environmental Justice Advocate, and Susana Valadez, Director of the Huichol Center for Cultural Survival and Traditional Arts. Our show is the Huicharica People, Protecting the Sacred Lands of Mexico. We were just speaking to the 78 multinational mining concessions where they are mining for gold and zinc and silver, and how this is affecting the lands and the cultural traditions and the spiritual traditions. Does the Mexican government have oversight of these mining concessions? And what are they doing, if anything, to protect the indigenous people and the environment? From what I have read online, First Majestics makes it sound like there is little to no impact to the people or the environment.
To my knowledge, there have been agreements with the communities and the government. However, they've been violated repeatedly, and most currently the community has delivered petitions to AMLO, the president of Mexico, during his last visit, and there are constant legal battles to protect the indigenous sacred lands through a community collective. First Majestic does claim that there is little to no impact on the environment, but even though water remediation has come to be incredibly advanced and affordable, the process that needs to be completed to the water level standards that we have in the United States for drinkable and usable water is a very expensive process. And because they go to these countries that are developing, they're able to get away with not completing water remediation. And even in the United States, you find that after water remediation has occurred, you're still finding high levels of mercury that are above the EPA standards. And after the corporations go through a legal process, they will no longer be held accountable. So this is a Canadian company going to Mexico to escape the regulations and destroy and instead take advantage of a community that can't fight the legal battles.
And is there environmental review process? Is there the ability for the Indigenous people to have a voice in this process?
So they're currently going through legal battles. They've been doing this for years, but the government doesn't necessarily listen to them because there is corruption within the government.
So I find that there's not very much government oversight or concern for the destruction of the native traditions that are at the root of Mexican spirituality, representing the whole nation of spirituality. The Huichol people are one of the only tribes left to have the highest degree of esteem for Mother Nature, and all of their ceremonies in this endangered region are based around being stewards of nature and taking care of the environment. And yet the Mexican government is turning a deaf ear and has actually just sold out the indigenous populations to the greater economic benefits of these mining companies. And it's not just First Majestic Silver Company in Vancouver. There's a lot of different concessions that are being granted to, you know, money speaks, international money speaks. So I think that the indigenous people's rights and claims and demands for ecological studies are pretty much being ignored. Again, the Mexican government and the local people who live on that land, who are not Huichols, but have ancestry that maybe goes back a couple hundred years, but the Huichol use of that land for a ceremonial site goes back thousands of years. But anyway, the government justifies the giving of the concessions because it will create jobs for a very impoverished region. And instead of looking towards other alternatives that could provide so many jobs and raise the quality of life for so many people without destroying this amazing, beautiful, biodiverse desert, they're just going in for the mining concessions. So it's a sad commentary.
And the land is a candidate for a UNESCO World Heritage Site designation. What does this mean? And if approved, what kind of protection would be provided?
Well, World Heritage Sites are protected against encroachment and mining concessions, you would think. So I know that this talk about the UNESCO protections has been going around for over a decade, and so far I haven't seen much movement on that, although there are a lot of nonprofit foundations here in Mexico that are pressing for that. Hopefully we'll have some good news in the future, but that's one of the reasons I was really excited to get the Nobel Peace Prize nomination, because that would have provided me with a global audience where I could espouse the positive aspects of creating a World Heritage Site out of Wirikutan and bring great minds together to figure out other solutions and other ways to use that land and protect the land as a World Heritage Site instead of just plowing it under and blowing it up to make mines.
Have the Huichol people mounted an opposition to this project? Is there danger of retaliation?
So from an Indigenous youth perspective, Indigenous students in the area have been joining together to form a collective to support the community to give money towards the legal fees that are accumulated for the fight to protect Wirikuta and to protect sacred lands in the area in general. However, there is retaliation by the Mexican government. Indigenous leaders last year had the deadliest year for environmental leaders. And this year, there has also been several deaths or attempts to kill Indigenous people who are fighting or who are standing up against environmental issues. Last year, Maracame Margarito Diaz Gonzalez was killed in his home. So it's still a very deep threat against the people who are fighting for the rights to keep their sacred lands and to protect them.
And you had spoke to youth activism and Indigenous leadership. Why is this so important to the climate movement?
It provides a unique perspective that will otherwise go unseen. Indigenous environmental youth activism provides a unique perspective in how they approach the climate crisis. We have traditional ecological knowledge that our elders teach us, and it's important to take that in part when you're fighting against a climate crisis that has been developed because of Western ideologies and ideologies of capitalism. So this generation of Indigenous youth have taken on the challenge of embracing and reclaiming their traditions as well as their cultures. We have actively fought to reclaim that ecological knowledge that was thought to be lost and has been suppressed, and there have been multiple efforts to erase it throughout colonization, throughout the mission systems, throughout Christianization of our nations. I personally was motivated to join the environmental justice activism movement from Isabella Zizi, who is one of the people who are leaders in the Idle No More SF Bay movement. These are the Indigenous leaders that are motivating the rest of us to join, and they're allowing us this space to reclaim our identities as Indigenous youth, and changing this approach that we had before of exclusion, and now we're including and we're understanding that some people might not have the privilege of understanding their identities or having based on poverty. So my message to the youth would be reclaim that identity and reclaim that culture. Our parents sometimes had poverty in the mission system. It was suppressed, and it's universal throughout the Americas of this idea of suppression and wiping out the Indian and saving the man. And we have to understand that we're not going to get anywhere by separating ourselves by nations. We're doing an intertribal effort nowadays, and we're trying to promote Indigenous environmental activism because we are the leaders and we are the forefront, and the nations have been protecting all the biodiversity of this continent for the last 1,000 years, and our voice needs to be present in the leadership positions, and we can't stand at the sidelines anymore. It's also important to acknowledge that we might be carrying traumas and to practice self-care while we're engaging with the environmental movement.
How can our listeners get involved and help protect the cultural way of life for the Wixárika people?
So the best thing that you can do for the community is to support by buying the arts. And you have to understand and educate yourself on the difference between appropriation and appreciation. We want you to be buying the art of Native artists to support the efforts in Wirirkuta, to support the Wixárika Indigenous community. Also, educate yourselves. Google. Google's your best friend. You have social media now. There's no reason that we can't educate ourselves. We have the resources that are available to us. The Consejo Regional de Wirirkuta is actively posting and giving updates. It is unfortunately in Spanish, but hopefully we can spread that and be able to engage with English listeners as well.
And Susanna, how can people get more involved with the work that you're doing and also protect the cultural way of life?
Well, I think let's talk about how to protect the cultural way of life first. One of the hugest problems is that peyote is going to become extinct. This amazing medicine teacher who mentors so many people to in the Huichol culture and in other Native American cultures to ascend to higher consciousness and to practice the ethics of stewardship of the planet. This medicine plant is going to become extinct because of over-harvesting, because of the drug cartels that are selling it, because it's illegal. So the drug cartels are profiting off of it, and they just plow up the desert. In addition to the mining companies, in addition to the mega agricultural companies who are doing cloud seeding so that it doesn't rain in the desert anymore, so they can grow their tomatoes, so that they don't get raindrops on the tomatoes, so they're affecting the weather, they're poisoning the water, et cetera, et cetera. So we have to look at the a bigger issue, And the biggest issue facing the Huichols is that their beloved peyote is going to become extinct, non-available. It takes a long time to grow it, and it's become another disposable resource. That would be the end of the Huichol culture, because the peyote is the central guiding image of their spirituality. Not the central guiding image, the central guiding focus of their spirituality. So I would say that peyote should be decriminalized, and that would take care of the drug cartel problems. But the thing is, you know, this is a plant teacher that has messages not only for indigenous populations, but for all of humanity. And now is the time for the plants, the medicine plants, to get their messages out of planetary stewardship big time. So locally in California, there's Decriminalized Nature. That's a nonprofit organization in the Bay Area. And they were the ones that were responsible for decriminalizing psychedelic plants, mushrooms, peyote, ayahuasca, ibogaine in Oakland. I don't know if you heard about that. That happened in April. And Decriminalized Nature is an organization that people should find out more about, because these plants can't be illegal. They need to be available under ceremonial conditions, and I'm not talking about appropriating indigenous ceremonies. Everybody's culture can relate to these plants in some way. Cultural tourism, people go to Wirikuta to take peyote with the native people. That's not the idea. The idea is to go to these places to be able to experience the magic and learn the mysteries of these sacred plants, and have the plants tell you what types of ceremonies and how their best use for the benefit of all humanity can take place. So my strongest recommendation is decriminalize, and then create jobs and museums and culturally relevant events that would make Wirikuta a destination location under UNESCO protection, where people could learn about the benefits of these medicinal plants under strict guidances, not go crazy, not invade Huichol places where they go, but to create learning spiritual centers outside of the lands that the Huichols harvest the peyote on, but most of all, be able to create greenhouses that replicate the native growing environment of the peyote, so that people all over the world could have access to the wonders of this amazing teacher mentor plant.
Yes, and we're going to have more information on our website. We'll put the huicholcenter.org. And shopthehuicholcenter.org. We'll have just a list of resources. Thank you, ladies, for joining us. This has been a wonderful conversation. I know that we could keep going. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for the opportunity. And Andrea, kudos to you. Keep up the good work. We're depending on you guys.
Teteri tekari uri mayatsi teka huaye huiwa takaka uime memu kanere urikuta. No mining site constructions in our sacred land of Wirikuta. Pampari Yutsi, thank you for letting me speak today.
Thank you. Thank you to Andrea Perez and Susana Valadez for being our guests today. And to our listeners for joining us, all the resources mentioned today will be available at SoCal350.org. You have been listening to Eco Justice Radio, recorded at KPFK Los Angeles, a project of SoCal 350. The show can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, and at SoCal350.org. Created by Mark and JP Morris, executive producer Jack Eye, engineer Blake Lampkin, interview hosted by myself, Jessica Aldridge from Adventures in Waste, original music by Javier Cadre. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.